Matthew Pollard, the rapid growth guy, has 5 multi-million dollar business success stories to his name and says why is the key to success. He's the creator and host of Better Business Coach, a top-rated iTunes podcast with over 20,000 listens so far. Matthew brings about rapid growth and business transformation around the world through his many speaking and coaching activities as well. He shares with us the key steps to achieve rapid growth. This and more next on Revenue Chat. Hi, everyone. This is Tony D'Urso with Revenue Chat. With us, we have Matthew Pollard, the serial growth hacker, who says, you decide every moment of every day who you are and what you believe in. You get a second chance every second. With 5 multi-million dollar business success stories to his name in industries as vastly different as telecommunications, construction, and nationally accredited education, Matthew has been characterized as a true differentiation, niche marketing, and sales systemization powerhouse. Matthew is successful in acquiring high-profile customers such as multinational award-winning franchises, world-renowned luxury automotive brands, leading medical institutions, law associations, and Australian Premiership football teams. Some of his accomplishments? Featured contributor and showcased in Successful Men in Business in 2014. Young Achiever Award recipient bestowed by Melbourne Business Awards in 2007. He's a recurring guest on Fox's 7 Good Day Austin. He's a featured contributor for CEO, Entrepreneur, and Top Sales World magazine. He's a sought-after judge at many of America's most prominent startup events, including Google Startup Weekend, Angel Hack, and Microsoft's 60 Seconds to Startup. He's a nominee for Best Sales Blogger by Best Sales Blogger Awards in 2015, and the list goes on and on. His website is MatthewPollard.com. That's P as in Paul, O-L-L-A-R-D. This guy is the real deal, folks. Get ready for some serious takeaways. All right. Matthew will share the key steps to achieve rapid growth. Let's bring him on. Hello, Matthew. How are you?
G'day, Tony. How are you going?
I'm doing great. I want to thank you so much for being on our show. You're so busy. It's an honor to have you. Thank you.
Mate, it's an absolute pleasure, mate. I'm honored to be invited.
Well, very cool. Well, you know, Matthew, you have such a long list of accomplishments, and I mentioned just a little of them. Perhaps you'd like to fill us in a little more on your roots, please, and how you became an expert in your field. Matthew, how did it all start for you?
Well, a lot of horrible things happened all at once, I guess. And then, funnily enough, it all turned out quite well. I guess that's probably the easiest way to summarize it. I was a very introverted kid at the age of 16. I had a reading speed of a sixth grader. And I really just, I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I had no idea where I was heading, what I was doing. I found school really, really difficult. I managed to get in the top 20% in the nation for my school grade. But that was from really, it was exhausting. I worked really, really hard. And my father knew that I just didn't have the energy to continue doing what I was doing and pushing without knowing what I wanted to achieve. So we agreed that I would go and take a job for a year so I could really work out what I wanted to do. I mean, everybody's goal was for me to go back to school and for me to continue a degree, but just for me to know what I wanted. And I took a job at a real estate agency. And that real estate agency, I really just took the job to hide away and try and figure out what I wanted to do. And it took me a couple of weeks before I found out the company was going bankrupt. And this was a few weeks before Christmas. And to people that don't know Australia very well, I mean, I live in the US now, and the holidays they take around Christmas is about a week, because you take a week off at Thanksgiving, a week off at Christmas. Well, Australia, it's summer break and it's Christmas, and it's, you know, our major holiday of the year. We take off. Most decision makers leave on the 20th of December and they don't come back until the 15th or 20th of January. So getting a job was incredibly difficult. I had no idea how I was going to go and what I was going to do, and the only thing I could get was commission-only sales. Now, if you can imagine, for an introverted person that struggled to talk to his own friends, I then went through the process of trying to learn how to sell and taking on commission-only sales, that was a terrifying thing for me. I had no idea how I was going to go with it. And I got 5 days worth of product training. And after those 5 days, I really got sent out on the road and told to just go and figure it out. And I just couldn't. I went out and it was 93 doors before my first sale, 93 doors of getting rejected, 93 doors of getting told to get a real job, 93 doors of really just feeling horrible about myself. And then I remember making my first sale, and all of a sudden, I just felt that, I remember being excited for about 10 minutes, and then all of a sudden having this somber realization that I had to do this again every day for the rest of the year. And it was just a horrible thing for me to be confronted with. It wasn't okay. So what I decided is there had to be another way. And what I did is I went searching for that way. And for me, I learned to sell through YouTube. I taught myself how to sell on YouTube. I learned the process of the sale. I learned all the steps of the sale. And that, within a period of 6 weeks, I became the best salesperson in the largest sales company in the Southern Hemisphere. And for an introverted guy, most people think that, you know, you can't learn to sell unless you've got, you know, you've got to have the gift of the gab. And for me, that wasn't the case. And since then, I've gone on from, you know, being terrified to sell to teaching hundreds to teaching thousands through my blogs, through my podcasts. And really, I've built, as you said in my bio, I've been responsible for 5 multi-million dollar businesses, because what I realized is that along the way, most people didn't do some of the other things that I did naturally, and they started with sales. And I'm a big believer that if you start with sales, you've already lost. There's a lot you can do in creating a differentiated and unified message, and there's a lot you can do in crafting and finding a niche market of willing to buy customers. And if you do that, well, then all of a sudden, you've got such a great group of people that are interested and love the idea of what you do, then selling is a lot easier.
Wow. Impressive. Wow. That is awesome. Thank you. I'm so impressed at your success and how you've overcome what appeared to be an obstacle or a very large barrier and stumbling block for many. And in part of what you teach and practice, you talk about businesses differentiating themselves from competitors. Why is it so important for a small business to differentiate? Can you tell us some about that, please?
Yeah, definitely. So what I find is a lot of people get stuck in the functional skill, what they provide. I mean, it makes sense. Like when we go and do a degree, we have to work out exactly what we do and where that fits, because we can't be a square peg in a round hole. And when we're looking for a job, we have to define what we do based on our functional skill. You know, we're a marketing specialist, or we're a branding expert, or we're a documentation writer, or we're a copywriter, or, you know, we're a customer service agent. We have to have a name that's a mass marketable thing so we can apply for these jobs that are very specific careers. Unfortunately, that doesn't work, or fortunately, if you like, it doesn't work within small to medium business. See, the problem with fitting that hole is if you say, I'm a copywriter, just like everybody else, then all of a sudden, then every other copywriter in the world is your competition. Now, that was fine before the internet and before this global world economy that we've created. I mean, if you were a copywriter and you were the only copywriter in Omaha, then you'd be fine. If you were the only copywriter in Melbourne, Australia, then you'd be fine. I mean, even that might have been a little bit competitive because the chances of you being the only one is limited. But now there are copywriters in India, in China, in Europe, in Australia, all competing for the same business. If you're in Central Texas and you're living in Austin like I am now, then you're competing with everybody in a world economy. And it's too hard. And the only thing you have to compete on is your price. So as a small business, if you don't have a differentiated and unified message that separates you from everyone else that you're competing with, well, then you're just counting down the days until you close the door on your business, because it's a long road to the bottom, because all you'll have to do is fight on price. And if price is your only discriminating factor, well, then you have to keep putting your prices down till eventually you're like, well, I'm not doing this for this price anymore. I'm going back to get a job. And I hate it when that happens.
Very, very interesting. Well, you know, there's a lot of hype about niche marketing, which I guess is where you're going. And there's talk about that it's tough. It really is limiting. Is finding a niche market really as important as everyone makes it out to be?
Okay, so what's probably easier for me to explain, Tony, is that for me, rapid growth, which, I mean, I'm known as the rapid growth guy, and rapid growth for me comes down to three steps, which is differentiation, message unification, niche marketing, and sales systemization. Now, what I guess the easiest way for me to explain is, I might tell you a story of a girl called Wendy that I worked with out of California, and she was the Beijing Language Academy. And they were really struggling. They were a language tuition school. They were teaching Mandarin to adults and children. And they were struggling to get $50 to $80 an hour for private consultation because there were all these new entrants coming in from other states opening up their own businesses, especially during the global financial crisis. All these people started to move to economies where they could get more money, and California was one of them. And so there were all these people coming in and trying to start their Mandarin schools in California. There were also, due to immigration, a lot of people coming in from China, and these people were also trying to start their own facility to teach Mandarin. Now, as you know, for people that are trying to start their own business, people are willing to cut their prices to the absolute bone just to get their first clients. So Wendy was, they were charging $20 to $30 to $40 an hour, and Wendy was paying her staff more than that. So she came to me with the problem. How do I compete in a saturated market where everyone's offering the same product as what I am? And I said, Wendy, I want to help you avoid the battle altogether. So what I did is I looked at Wendy's clients, and I found of all the people she worked with, out of everybody she worked with, there were two clients she helped with so much more than just understanding Mandarin. The first thing she helped them understand was this concept of galaxy. Now, galaxy is, for us in the US or in Australia, it's what we see in outer space. But in China, it is their definition of their version of rapport. See, in China, sorry, in the US, if you want to do business with someone, you might meet with them for one meeting, maybe two at the absolute most. And if they take more than that, maybe a few phone calls, you'd assume the person's dragging their heels or they're just not interested in buying from you. However, in China, they want to catch up with you for dinner five or six times before they even speak business. They probably want to see you drunk over karaoke once or twice, because they want to know what kind of person you are. And the reason for that is that they're talking 50 to 100-year deals, not 12 or 24-month contracts like we used to here in the US and Australia. So they want to know what kind of person they're getting into bed with, see, because they want it's sometimes longer than a lifetime. So the second thing she helped them understand is the difference between e-commerce in China and e-commerce in the Western world. And the third thing, and probably most important, is she helped them understand the importance of respect. See, again, in the Western world, if somebody hands you a business card, you will continue talking, barely even look at it, and put it in your pocket. However, in the East, you're supposed to hold it, cherish it, look at it, appreciate it, and not even stare at them now, stare at the card until eventually you put it into a card case where you'll take it home and cherish it because you appreciate meeting that person. I just spoke at the Top 100 Performance Conference for Electrolux only a few weeks ago, and that was in Bangkok. And when I had vice presidents of major organizations that I was handing my card to, and they would stop looking at me and they would just stare at the card the entire time throughout that conversation. It's so, so different. And Wendy helped them understand this. She helped them understand the importance of that respect and also the importance of accent reduction. Because while they don't expect us to sound exactly like them, and they do appreciate that we understand and we learn to speak Mandarin, they also want to see that we appreciated their culture enough to at least attempt to control our accent a little bit. Now, Wendy helped them with these things. And I said to Wendy, Wendy, you're doing so much more for these two customers than just Mandarin coaching. What are you doing? She goes, well, you know, there's just a few extra things above and beyond because they needed help. She was stuck in her functional skill. I said, Wendy, is it fair to assume that as a result of doing what you've done, these people will now be more successful in China? She said, well, yeah, that's kind of the hope. We rebranded her into the China Success Coach. We rebranded her organization to the China Success Institute, and we created the China Success Intensive. This was a five-week, $30,000 program that worked with the executive, the spouse, and the children to help them be ready to go to China. This is the power of a unified message. Now, let's talk about niche. We were only working with these two clients. Now, surely, that's cutting out a large amount of her market. But there's lots of people being relocated to China. And if you look at the fact that there's this huge industry going out, who else was doing what she did? Nobody. She was a person that had her own market. She went from struggling to get $50 to $80 an hour to having her own market of clients for $30,000 products. Now, why the executive, the spouse, and the children? Because if the spouse and the children aren't happy in China, well, then the executive is going to be constantly called home, and that's not going to be okay. So, and that's going to result in them being less successful. So you've got to work with the executive and the spouse. But secondly, you can charge a lot more. But working with that refined niche, you know they need this. Now let's talk about sales systemization. Now, she could have gone out and tried to sell this product, and she would have been very successful at it, selling to corporate. But think about it. Where else do all of these people have to go before they're relocated to China? They have to go and get a visa. Anyone that wants to work in China has to go and get a document that's been signed off by the Chinese government to say this person is allowed to come and work in our country. And these immigration agents used to make between $2,000 to $3,000 for organizing all that paperwork and finding the client and handling all that bureaucracy. $2,000 to $3,000. So what we did was we got Wendy to offer them a $3,000 commission check. When their visa was approved, they'd say, congratulations, you've been approved to go to China. I just want to double check that you're ready to be relocated to China. And they'd say, yeah, we started to learn Mandarin. The kids are getting really great hang of it now. And, you know, we've got a house organized over there. So, yeah, I think we're pretty set. And they would respond, no, there's a lot more to being successful in China than just understanding the language. I think you better speak to the China success coach. They'd book in the call, and after a very short conversation, they would spend $30,000. I mean, after all, the corporate was paying, and they were already spending a fortune relocating the executive. What was another $30,000 to ensure its success? And they would, and Wendy would pass on a $3,000 commission check to the immigration agent. So she made $27,000 for delivering a 5-week course with no sales requirement, really, outside a quick phone call. And the immigration agent made almost double the revenue, but more than three times the profit because there was no real work required, just by helping Wendy get her ideal clients. That's the power of that three-step rapid growth process. With a unified message, the China Success Coach, the China Success Intensive, focused niche market, understanding that what she does is she provides a specific service that no one else can get to the executive being relocated to China, and a sales system that created, and you know, you can't always create a joint venture, but she created a joint venture that converted people that needed her service into paying clients. She had rapid growth.
Wow, Matthew. I'm impressed. I'm floored. That is incredible, the three-step process. I love it. It's brilliant, remarkable. I've been in sales and marketing for a lot of years. That is brilliant stuff. Very cool. Listeners, take notes of this. Listen to this again. These are awesome, awesome points brought by our guest, Matthew Pollard. I love it. Good job. Now, we mentioned some of this a little bit earlier, and I've seen some videos, so I'm confused if on this next point I'm going to make, if I'm confused if we've answered it satisfactorily here. Because we've talked about, and I've listened to some videos too, about you helping business owners who are introverted and don't have the gift of gab. And is your three-step process, how does that interact with, or how does that help that introverted business owner to get sales, basically?
Yeah, sure. So you can imagine an introverted salesperson, if they have to sell something that everybody else is selling to. Let's assume Wendy, for instance. If she walked into an organization and she said, I teach Mandarin to people that need to learn Mandarin, and I charge $50 to $80 an hour. Now, she's got the problem with, firstly, do people need Mandarin? And secondly, do people, you know, is her product the cheapest? And now she has to try and close the customer. It's uncomfortable because everybody knows what Mandarin coaching is. What if instead she went into a networking function and somebody said, hey, what is it you do? And she responded, hi, yeah, I'm the China Success Coach. And people would be like, what? What is that? It's too vague. Now, on their invitation, she gets to say, well, you know how when people go to China and they have to get their visa and they're being relocated And, you know, they think that all they need to know is Mandarin to be successful. And then when they get there, they'll get shocked to find out that these are the other things they need to know. Do you know anyone like that? And they'll respond, well, not really, but I'm interested. Tell me a little bit about it. And then she'll get to tell them. All of a sudden, she's not selling anymore. She's instructing on their invitation. See, when people ask me what I do, I say, I'm the rapid growth guy. And people are like, well, that's different. I've never heard that before. Are you like a sales trainer, or are you a marketer, or are you, you know, what exactly do you do? And I say, well, you know what? There's a lot of people out there that are marketers. But what I find with marketing that's really quite, well, horrible really, is that most marketers will tell you this is how you need to market your product to sell your product. But they've never actually sold. They've gone and done an MBA, and then they've never actually physically been out in the field. Now, I was lucky enough to do my MBA as well. I got invited to go back and do an MBA when I won a Young Achiever of the Year award in 2007. However, I was actually one of those other people that also went out and sold. See, I learned direct sales. I was very introverted, but I learned direct sales by studying YouTube. So as a result, I've actually been out in the field and I've done it. Now, the problem with salespeople is predominantly they know how to sell, but they have no idea how to price and create a reason for why somebody buys. So the problem with marketers is they've never been out in the field, so they don't know exactly what works. And the salespeople have no idea how to market. They just know they hate the marketers because they've got no experience. On the flip side, you've got branding experts, and branding experts are these abstract people that don't quite know. They're always looking for those fluffy words that try and get people to sell because they've got no attachment to people's values. So what I do predominantly is I sit somewhere in between all of that. You know, I specialize in branding, but I'm a master in NLP. So I focus on making sure that the brand that we create is congruent with the person and the individual so they can congruently sell who they are, as opposed to something that they feel disingenuous about. I focus on making sure that their message is crystal clear so people want to know more about what they do. I make sure that they have a valid niche and a sales system that's set up. But more than that, I step them away from worrying about things like SEO and branding, because the problem you have is so many people have one experience or one discipline, and because of that, they drag you to what they know and tell you the way to save your business is to do what I tell you to do. But they only know one thing, so of course they're going to say that. I specialize in SEO, I specialize in branding, I specialize in niche marketing and sales systemization, and that's why I can say that I specialize in rapid growth. Do you see the difference between that and saying that I'm a sales coach?
Big time. Great points. That's very refreshing. Really cool stuff here, Matthew. Thank you. I got it. I totally see the differentiation part, and I totally see the point on how to sell, even without being able to sell. That's very cool. Now, as the rapid growth guy, one thing I've seen you said somewhere, that rapid growth in the business may not or cannot be a good thing. Can you comment and explain what you mean by that on the rapid growth?
Yeah, sure. So one of the things that people can hit a wall with is people will come to me and they'll say, well, I need more customers. And I say, okay, so explain to me why you need more customers. Well, I'm not making enough profit. Okay, so what sort of wastage do you have? How much money do you spend on supporting people in customer service? How much time do you physically have in your business? Like, let's say I was currently 80% busy in my business, working with 10 clients. And I said I wanted to triple my profit. Now, if I triple my profit and my current 10 clients take up 80% of my time, how much time am I now taking? It's 240% of my time. So before I can rapidly grow, I first need to step myself out of the business slightly and get other people to help me. Other times, you have, let's say I'm selling widgets, and I'm selling, you know, at the moment I'm selling 1,000 widgets and 100 of them come back, and that's deteriorating my profit. Well, when I grow, I've now got 300 of them coming back, and now I need more customer service operators, more space in my office. It's always better to fix the problems of the business before going and looking at rapid growth. And that's why while I do have a rapid growth intensive, where in the space of 6 hours, I take people from mediocre growth to absolute rapid growth. And I deliver that 2 hours a week over a 6 week, 2 hours every 2 weeks over a period of 6 weeks. Sometimes I'll look at a business and I'll say, look, if you get rapid growth right now, you're going to go insane because you're not going to be able to support the customers that you have. Things will go amiss. You've got more customer complaints already than you know what to do with. So we have to fix that first. And that's where we start to look at things like creating the solid foundations. We look at the systems, the people, the processes to make sure that everything works first. And we also want to make sure everything is currently in line with the organizational vision. So sometimes I'll do a bit of a hybrid where I'll help them understand what the unified message is. Then I'll help them dilute that right through the organization. Then we create the systems, the processes, make sure we've got the right people. And then we create the rapid growth strategy.
Wow, I got it. It's sort of like doing a little bit of an organization step and preparing for the big volume of work and influx that you know is going to come. Very smart.
Well,
I like that.
What I find is that occasionally organizations that, I mean, everybody says they want more customers. Everybody says that they want growth. But the problem is that as a rapid growth specialist, I can create rapid growth out of anything. Like I've worked with so many businesses and I've had such phenomenal success. But there are two things that can happen if you're not careful. The first one is that people will come back to me and say, I've got rapid growth, I've got lots of customers, great, I'm so happy, except for the fact I hate those customers. I really don't like working with them. And can you make them stop calling me? And the reason why that happens is frequently people want rapid growth, but they forget that they've got to work with these customers. So one of the things that I do with all clients is I focus on their goals first. I want to understand exactly what they want to achieve before they take that next step. So I take them back to what their three business goals are, their three personal goals. I get them to write down in what's called SMART criteria, but the most specific is specific, measurable, and time-based. And then I get them to summarize them in 250 words or less, including why it's important to them. Now, I talk about this a lot in the whole process in a podcast. On my podcast, Better Business Coach, podcast session number 17, it's called Forget About Goals, Why is the Key to Success? And I break down the whole process about why the why statement is so important. See, most people will focus on goals that their parents have instilled in, their friends have instilled in, their drunk college roommate said was important, and for some reason it stuck with us. And we continue to focus on this goal that really we don't care about. And because of that, a lot of times when we focus on rapid growth, we grow something we don't physically want. So it's so important to understand what our goals and our values are before we do that. So whenever I look at a customer avatar or as a customer document and say, and if you want, Tony, I'm happy to give people a five-step strategy in a second on how they would create their own unified message. But one of the major things that I suggest that people do first is they understand their goals and they use that as the lens for looking at what their possible market segments are to say, this is the group that I'm going to love working with. And then the second thing is, yeah, you've got to make sure that the systems work, because one of the worst things to have is a rapid growth business where all of a sudden people are like, wow, we don't have the staff to support that. Our systems are collapsing. We don't have the ability to create a manufacturing line to produce that much stock. And I know these sound like wonderful problems to have, but not when you're living them. When you've got the phone won't stop ringing with customer complaints because all of a sudden you don't have enough support operators, or because you've got more defects because you weren't supposed to produce that much stock, or because your system crashed because all of a sudden you've got more people coming to your website. Sounds lovely, but actually is horrific if it's not managed.
I totally see that. It makes great sense. That is an awesome service that you are providing, and that is some awesome stuff. Yes, why is the key to success? It's like saying, well, you have a goal. What's your purpose? What's the reason? Why are you doing what you're doing? What are you trying to accomplish? That's not the goal. That's your why. I like that. Very cool. Now, so business wants to grow. How do they know if they're ready, Matthew? And how can they get ready to grow? Steps on that, please.
Well, the first thing you want to look at is what's your defect ratio and your complaint ratio, right? So one of the things that I get people to do is I first get them to understand their time. So what I get them to do, and look, this isn't my strategy. This is Steve Covey's strategy. But Stephen Covey's, you know, got some wonderful things that are out there in the literature. I'm a big believer of. I find a lot of people try and recreate things to brand them themselves. And I think that when you get good at what you do, people recognize the fact that when you tell somebody that they're using somebody else's strategy to do this purpose, they don't mind. Because, and this is one of the things that I'm big on educating other coaches on, because the reason a coach should be good at what they do is because they've consumed lots of information and they synergize so certain bits of information. For instance, the goal sheet that I just suggested, the way people should write the goals, that's Stephen Covey and One Minute Manager. And the synergy between the two makes it work ridiculously effectively. But what I get people to do is I get people to write down a simple chart. And the chart is you write down a list of every single activity that you do for the entire week. Now, it's going to be a productivity killer for an entire week. However, after that, you'll be very thankful you did it. Once you've written down all of the tasks you did for the entire week, I then get people to write down next to those, classify them one of four things: urgent and important, not urgent but important, not important but urgent, not important, not urgent but not important. Now, the reason for these four clarifications are that most people have no idea whether or not what they do today is effective and what it's being utilized for. So let's discuss each one of these milestones. The first one is urgent and urgent and not important. Now, these are people, I'm going to try that one again. The first one that we want to focus on is urgent and important. Now, urgent and important tasks, the problem with this is, yes, you've got to do them, and yes, they are important, but why are they urgent? Well, the reason why they're urgent is something went wrong in the system. Something didn't get done. A service member, a member of staff didn't do what they were supposed to do. A system malfunctioned. Because why is it urgent? It should be important, but not urgent. But because something went wrong, now you've got an upset customer on the phone you've got to save. Or you've got to run that product out to that client. Or you've got to handle this customer who feels unloved because the customer support department didn't call them regularly to double check that they were happy. So these are the things that you need to work out how to eradicate. What you've got to do is you've got to work out where the system let you down and how you create a process to make sure that that time isn't being wasted anymore. You've got a process so nothing hits that urgent and important. It makes time manageable. Now, I generally like everybody in the organization to do this. The second thing that is the second category, which is important but not urgent. Now, this is where you should spend your entire day. This is a lovely space where your business is growing and you're constantly doing important tasks, but they're not, you know, you're getting to them well in time. Now, if you grow too rapidly and it's not controlled, all of a sudden you start to miss things, and then all of a sudden you've got the urgent and important tasks. Now, the third one is urgent but not important. Now, this is because other people haven't done their work right. You've got people saying, hey, Matt, I really need you to help me with this. Or, Tony, look, mate, I've got a big presentation due tomorrow and I haven't finished it. I need you to help me. It's because they haven't done their job. So what you need to do at that stage is you need to say to them, look, no, I can't help you right now. I'm in the middle of doing my stuff. However, you know, if you want to be nice, you can say, I can help you in 2 or 3 weeks' time. Next time I can schedule you in, because if it's truly something that they're on top of, they just need your help, they'll be able to wait 2 or 3 weeks. If it's something that they have let go and now it's due tomorrow because it's, you know, they haven't managed their time, well, that's their problem. It's not your problem. Now, if you own the business, you may have to say, I'll fix it this time, but I need to write you a formal warning so you don't do that again. And then the fourth one is not urgent and not important. A lot of people spend like 30 to 40% of their day doing these tasks. And these tasks just are a waste of everybody's time. So two guesses what you do with them. You stop doing them. Now that you've created all of those, what I want people to do is then look down them and say, okay, out of all of these tasks that I've written that are still not urgent but important, the tasks that I need to focus my attention on, I want you to grab a color pen and I want you to highlight them or write a big O next to the ones you can outsource. Now, these are ones where you can either hire other people to do those tasks or outsource them to overseas or outsource them to other people within the US or Australia or wherever you're from and give those tasks to other people. Now, I once worked with a ghostwriter that, you know, he said, look, the only thing I would be able to outsource to continue to grow is my writing, and obviously people are paying me to do the writing. And I said, let me ask you a question. I said, when you write something, how long does it take you to write a chapter? And let's say he said 5 days. I said, what if somebody wrote a chapter and handed it to you, and they were pretty good, but they weren't you? how long would it take you to fix it? And he said, oh, roughly half a day. I said, so why don't you get outsource all your writing and then fix every chapter with your half a day? Now you can create 10 times as many books than you used to. Now you don't have a stopgap to your growth. Yes, it's still him and his brand and everything he's doing, but he would still make it as good. Actually, he said that he could make it better if he was fixing than if he was writing it himself because he saw it from a third-party view. And that was what was phenomenal. There were certain things that he did within his book, like the architecture and the structure of the book that he had to do himself, and that was 10 hours of the much longer process. But a lot of the writing was where a lot of the time was taken, and he could outsource that. So you've got to look not just at outsourcing the jobs that are non-essential, but the other jobs that could potentially, where you could outsource it to someone else and get it back and do half the work and still add your own personal flavor and brand to it. Now, once you've done that, you should then look at how many hours you physically have to work, and because these are the tasks you can't outsource. So if that's, you know, you now got yourself down to 10 hours a week, firstly, you should focus on getting yourself down to 10 hours a week. And then, you know, based on how many hours in your goals you're willing to work, maybe you're only willing to work 30 hours a week, in which case you can only triple in size. Even if you've got an organization of 100 people, you personally need to be involved in 10 hours for that period of growth. Therefore, you can now grow to 30 hours. And then maybe you've got a bigger budget to start to find someone of a much higher competency level to replace yourself. And that's where things get fun, because now you have a business that churns you money that you don't physically have to work in.
Wow. Very smart. Brilliant. Love it. Very good information here. Very good point of view. Very good. Awesome. I love it. You make everything seem so simple in growing a business, Matthew. That's why you're the expert. I love it. All right, let's talk about price. You've made a mention somewhere in some of your literature that competing on price, what happens, and I see this, when you compete on price, it's the competitor lowers, you lower. The competitor lowers, you lower. They lower, they lower. And it's like it's almost like everybody's fighting to get to the bottom for scraps and into like a negative spiral. How can you get out of that, please?
Well, the first thing is you've got to stop competing in the market you're currently competing in. Because the reason why there's this downward spiral of competing on price is because you have nothing separating you than price. Now, if by chance you do have things to separate yourself in that market and you're not separating yourself, well, then maybe you can still stay in that market. You just need to play, you know, the game slightly differently. However, what most people say is, oh, my quality is better than everyone else. Well, everyone says that. You've got to find the thing that is that's congruent to you, the things that you do above and beyond. For Wendy, those were the Galaxy, the e-commerce, and the accent reduction. With me, it's the fact that I combine so many functional skills all in one place so I can provide rapid growth advice across multiple disciplines. For the ghostwriter that I was talking about, it's that he could craft person's topic matter and make it very simple and craft the authority throughout the entire book so at the end they knew one thing about him and they knew he was an expert in that. What you've got to do is figure out what your innate ability is. And one of the five-step process that I always suggest people follow is that they go through, firstly, by writing down the names of all of the customers that give you crazy testimonials, crazy recommendations to everyone because they love you so much. Now, why do they do this? Because you're obviously doing something much more for them than anyone else could. Otherwise, why would they care so much? Secondly, I would write down all the names of all the people you make absolutely crazy money out of. People that when they ring your phone, you're like, cha-ching, I'm going to make a fortune today. Now, those are the kind of people that obviously you would love to have as customers, but some of them you don't enjoy working with as much as others. So now you've got the names of these two sets of clients down. What you then do is you say, okay, based on these two groups of people, can I see any similarities between any of the names? So what you do is you start to group them based on the similarities you see between the types of customers. This is what's called customer segments or customer segmentation. When you break these down into segments, what I then want you to do is I want you to look at these segments and I want you to pull out two color pens. Now, I always suggest pull out a blue and a red pen, but it doesn't matter what color, it's just to make things easier. So what I want you to do is I want you to circle the customer groups in blue that sing your praises, give you referrals, and love you more than, you know, they just, they love working with you, and you can tell because they just keep giving you testimonies. They keep, if you ask for a testimonial today and you ask for a page, they'd write you three. Then I want you to get out a red pen and I want you to circle all the customer groups you make crazy money out of. Now, what you'll find is that there will be some groups, not all groups, but I haven't had, I just did this at the National Freelance Association. I had 200 freelancers in the room and we did this workshop. And at the end, I said, now, who's come up with a unified message that they believe will help their business grow in a more substantial way? And 85% of the room put their hands up. I then said, and this is horrible, how many people in the room have spent more time today on marketing? The workshop was 45 minutes compared to any other time in their business. And about 92% of the room put their hands up. So
wow.
What I ask you, I know it's a lot, right? So what I ask mm-hmm. you to do is then have a look at those groups and you'll find at least one with a blue and a red circle around them. And what I tell people to do is pick just one. Now, why one? Because you need to focus your attention somewhere. You need to become the advocate of that specific customer group, because if they know you understand them better than they know themselves and you provide a service that you already know they love because they're writing you great testimonials and you already make great money out of them, so therefore you know you can make enough money out of the industry that they're in, then that's where your true customer base is going to be. Now, then what you do is you say, now what are the, you know, what are the things that I do for these customers outside my pure functional skill? We discussed this. For Wendy, it was those three things. For Derek, one of my ghostwriting clients, it was the fact that he created that authority. And for me, it was the fact that I bring all these competencies together. And then once you have all of those things down, you then say, so what is the higher level benefit of what I provide? For Wendy, it was China success. For Derek, it was the authority architecture. He became the authority architect. And for me, it's rapid growth. You have to work out what yours is. And as soon as you do that, you don't compete on price anymore. You've got that unified message. You know the niche. You then develop your pricing and packaging structure specifically for that niche. And you message to them, helping them see that you are the only choice for people like them.
Wow, that is just brilliant, Matthew. I love it. I'm very excited to look at these again in terms of even for my own business. That's fantastic. Thank you for sharing all that. I love it. I, however, can, not that I'm a negative person, but I can almost visualize some trepidations of people. Wouldn't they worry about cutting out, oh, I'm going to cut out that group. That's money. I'm going to cut out this group. What would you say to people that are worried about, you know, cutting out other groups that are of potential customers?
Sure. So I think I've been well publicized to saying that if you speak to everyone, you speak to no one. But let's change it just slightly. If you sell to everybody, you sell to nobody. What that means is that so many small businesses, they focus on just selling to the small group of people that, to any person that will be willing to buy. And because of that, they have to be everything to everybody. And as a result, yeah, you have to compete on price. And you've also got to compete against all of these other carriers, saying this is the one single thing that I do and I work with this group. You're right. That does take you out of the game for a lot of people. Now, if somebody approaches you, it doesn't mean that you can't sell to them. What it means is that your outward-facing marketing is built to attract a specific type of person as opposed to everybody. That is the difference. Now, when I was a few years ago, we built a school, and it was, you know, it was, if we had gone and targeted what most people did, like people that already had degrees and wanted to do a higher level qualification to understand business, we'd be competing against MBAs, and it would have taken us 2 to 3 years to get our first few hundred clients, and it would have been a tough road the entire way. On the flip side, if we had have taken a different tact and said, well, let's go after people that have just left high school and they want to go, they couldn't get into university, but they want some skills, we could have potentially focused those, but we would have been competing against every single other college out in the market. And, you know, we were brand new, and it takes a long time for a school to develop a reputation where people want to come and work with them. So what we did is I went looking for a market that was different, a market of people that would be willing to work with a new school if there was a message that they identified with. And this is the thing. People are actively looking for messages that they can identify with. They're actively searching. The goal is to use technology, psychology, and strategy to create a large enough megaphone and point it in the exact right direction to get those ideal customers to come to you. So what we did is I found the market of tradespeople. And what I realized is tradespeople had two things going on. The first one is school had let them down. They hated school. They had this view that if you can't do, you teach. It's what they told themselves to feel better about the fact that they didn't do well in school. They went and did an apprenticeship at the age of 16, as soon as they could leave school, and they learned how to be a builder, a plumber, electrician, all those types of business. Now, these people hated school, but they'd learned through an apprenticeship, generally through sarcasm and aggression, because their boss didn't know how to train them, and eventually they became good at what they did, and then all of a sudden, they found themselves better than most people, and they went, well, the hell with this, I'm getting paid the same as everyone else. I'm going to go out into business for myself. Now they've hired staff. They've got no idea how to train the staff, so obviously they train them the way they learned, aggression and sarcasm. And what do you know? Their staff don't perform there very well. They also found themselves in charge of marketing and sales and budgets and financial plans and accounting and continuous improvement, writing the documentation for systems. None of this they had experience in. They needed business coaching, but they couldn't afford business coaching. They hated school. So we came up with business coaching at a price you can afford. We ran a program which we only sold to people on a trade site. Builders, plumbers, electricians, tilers, anyone that was on a trade site that were our customers. And we knew them better than they knew themselves. If they said we didn't have any problems, I said, really, people in your industry tend to experience this, 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 and this problem. Are you sure you don't have any of those? Oh, well, if somebody else is willing to mention it to you, yeah, I do too. And we'd take them on as clients. We grew to 3,500 students in 3 years. Every single one of our teachers was not a teacher. They were a business coach that we managed to get them a teaching certification. It was only a 5-week program. Anyone can learn to teach that quickly in that type of level of qualification. It wasn't a high-level degree. And we taught them how to run their business like a business coach would. We ran every class like a mastermind, 20 people in it, all business owners. And that's why it was so successful. Now, did we just stay with tradespeople? No, of course we didn't. That's where we started. We got our first few thousand, you know, our first thousand and a half clients that way. Then we said, well, realistically, when you think about it, hairdressers and florists, they're kind of the same. They did an apprenticeship. They now run their own business and they have no idea. So we started to take on hundreds of hairdressers, hundreds of florists. And then we went one step further and said, well, think about it, really. Doctors, lawyers, these people have all gone and got themselves a qualification on how to do a functional skill, but they have no experience in actually selling their business or running their financials or doing any of the things like the tradespeople's problems were. So we then picked up the Law Institute of Victoria. We picked up a large medical association. We picked up your equivalent of the American equivalent of Macy's, and then later we even picked up your equivalent of the NFL, the top three championship teams, which is our AFL. So we went from only working on trade sites to growing rapidly, but it's because we owned a market. We already had ridiculous amounts of credibility because that market, we were the one place that they would go, the trusted source for education and coaching. And because of that, we could leverage it to everything else. See, the problem is most people start with trying to sell to everybody because they're scared of alienating themselves from anyone because they need clients, any client, but they're actually doing themselves a disservice. If they said, here's a small group of clients that I work with and focus their attention on bringing those clients to them, then all of a sudden, everything would change.
Wow, that is such smart advice. I love it. When you try to sell to everyone, you sell to no one. I love it. Very brilliant. That's incredible. And I can see the progressions of growth and how that works. That's very cool stuff. Matthew, what keeps you going? What drives you? You know, at this point in my show interviews, I like to talk about willpower and inspiration. You have such drive, such force. It's not always been easy for you. It's not always been, you know, roses. And you talked about you've had some pitfalls. But when you run into a failure or an obstacle, let's call it, what keeps you going, please?
Sure. So I think that I have a mindset that I won't allow anything to own me. And I think that's really important. So I had a reading speed of a sixth grader. So I discovered different ways of learning. I learned on YouTube. Now I consume 3 books a week on Audible, and I listen to about 30 blog posts a week by emailing them to my AdPocket account and listening to them on an iPhone app called Lizgo. I don't allow anything to hold me back. I now read more books on average than any well-trained reader because I listen to books while I'm walking the dog. I listen to books while I'm commuting to different places. Most people, they can't do that when they're trying to read and drive. That's quite a scary thing. So, yeah, that drives me. The second thing is that what I realize, so I, as you said in my introduction, I've worked in telecommunications, construction, education. And they're just 3 of the industries I've worked in. I get excited about rapid growth. For me, that's my ecstasy. I know that I can create rapid growth out of anything, but what I look for is pre-established industries. I mean, everywhere you go, telecommunications is everywhere. I created a rapid growth business. I created the largest business-to-business brokership for mobile phones in our country in 3 years in a saturated market while most other competitors were shrinking because I understood the conceptuality of rapid growth. And for me, it is the only thing I fixate on. What I realized is that the thing that I loved, that eventually I was running a business that didn't need me for rapid growth anymore. And that's why I coach and consult now. Now, I work a lot with corporate, but I work with 4 to 6 small businesses every single month. And I work with them on a very simple program to give them the strategy. I'm very different to a lot of coaches. I don't look for long-term clients. I believe that within 6 hours, I can give them all the strategy and all the tools that they need to create their rapid growth business for themselves. And that's what I focus on. Now, for me, that is my most humble. I get to play with 4 to 6 businesses a month and create a rapid growth strategy. And I get to see it work, and I get goosebumps when I hear about their results and what happened. See, for me, very similar like I talked about with the goals. If you don't know why you're doing something and you're not congruent with it, well then perhaps that won't be your source of energy. And that's going to stop you from attaining rapid growth because your competitor may have that. For me, it doesn't matter if I haven't slept for 3 days. I mean, I actually did this. Coming into Thanksgiving, I had I got given 2 video interviews. I had to go and do a KXAN interview at 5:15 in the morning, a Fox 7 interview at 7:30, and then I had 9 o'clock till 6 o'clock video shoot where I was producing my Rapid Growth University. And I booked that in because I was like, well, it's the day after Thanksgiving, it's a nice quiet day, so yeah, it's a good time to do a video shoot. And then I was like, well, but you know, I'll be able to get to bed in time because I've got, you know, family coming over for Thanksgiving, but I'll, you know, it'll be fine. I'll go to bed at midnight, I'll get up at 8 o'clock, and I'll go and do the video shoot. Well, then I got 2 interviews, didn't I? Now I've got to get up at 5:15. So I went to bed at 9 a.m., except, of course, I had Thanksgiving going on at my house. So I got woken up several times, and then I went and did a KXAN interview, and then I went and did a Fox 7 interview. I negotiated a deal with, met the people from Digital Marketer while I was there, and had a whole conversation with them and set up the fact that I'd be speaking at an event because why not take advantage of the situation while you're there? And then on top of that, I then went to a film studio and recorded for 8 hours straight. And I was the one that still had energy in the room because I was doing what I love where most people don't get to ever do that. So when you ask me what drives me, it's I love creating, talking about rapid growth. I love helping people obtain it. And that's, for me, that's my drug. So if other people are looking for a way to do that, if you know your why, if you know what you put on this earth to do and you get to do that, you'll never search for energy again in your life.
You've got me speechless, Matthew, and that's very difficult to do because being Italian, I like to talk all the time. Wow, that's amazing. Awesome. I just can't say enough or give enough superlatives. I am very impressed. The why is the key to success, and that's your energy. You never run out of energy. Energy is limitless. Very cool. Matthew, this has been really, epic. That's a great word. This has been epic. I love it. Thank you so much. Now, we're close to wrapping up. Is there anything you'd like our audience to know about, please?
Yeah, sure. So the first thing, I like to leave people with a bit of parting advice. And it's not mine, it's Robert Kiyosaki's, but, you know, he's well notable for everybody. And one of the things that he says is that most people never start because they're always waiting for the lights to go green. And in entrepreneurship, it's like planned chaos. You should have goals, you should have a strategy, but you need to understand that you're never going to have all the answers. But the answers should arrive by the time that you need them. But if you keep waiting for the lights to go green, you're never going to start. So my advice to people is start now. And to answer your question about where people can find out more information about me, that five-step process, you can get that anywhere on my website by opting into my website at matthewpollard.com. There's also huge amounts of other information. I have a podcast called Better Business Coach Podcast where I give some ridiculous value. I do have some great guests, but I give some great worksheets on how to improve business. I do what I call my sermon on the mic, where I tell people about how to make money out of their business. And I have a award-winning blog called the Rapid Growth Blog, which educates people on things like the 7 self-destructive mindsets of someone new to sales. I've got a post called The Why Businesses Only Have Price to Compete, which gives you a lot more framework around what you're trying to achieve and how you stop competing on price. So definitely check out that. I mean, even if you type in Matthew Pollard in Google, I think I come out like 8 or so, 9 times for articles on Entrepreneur, CEO, Salesforce.com, and so many other places. So feel free to check me out there or find me on Twitter at @MatthewPollard_.
Awesome. Well, that's fantastic. Well, thank you very much, Matthew. I hope that all of our listeners here tune in to MatthewPollard.com. That's P-O-L-L-A-R-D. And check on your 5 steps and everything else. Check on your podcast. And that's fantastic on your over 20,000 downloads and listens. Matthew, it's been wonderful, fantastic, awesome, quite a pleasure. I like that word earlier. It's epic. Great. Thank you so much for all this wonderful insight. Loved it.
It was my absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
All right. Well, that's Matthew Pollard, everyone. And that his site is Matthew Pollard, PollARD.com. All right. Well, thank you again, everyone. And stay tuned to our next show on Revenue Chat. We're going to have Casey Dean Eberhardt, an entrepreneur since his first business venture at the age of 5, who loves the art of the deal. At the age of 22, he was general manager of a 22 million amusement park. Years later in Los Angeles, he found himself working as a production manager, line producer on feature films, including the Oscar-winning Best Picture, Being John Malkovich. Diving into uncharted waters time and time again, he owned businesses ranging from a gymboree for the betterment of children to an online t-shirt company and just about everything in between. This and more on the next episode of Revenue Chat. If you want to appear on Revenue Chat, it's easy. Details at tonyduroso.com/services. And please drop me a message. I'd love to hear from you. All right. Thanks again, everyone. And until next time, remember, you can make life better for yourself and everyone. Choose wisely.